So, obviously, you have got to a really high level now in your career. How have you managed to do that whilst also having children and a husband and trying to manage both sides, really?
Trying to have a life. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things, actually. First of all, I really like working. I think it's... I mean, personally, I like the fact that my children see that I'm kind of working hard as well as my husband. I've been very lucky that my husband, particularly over the last sort of 2 years, two, 3 years, has been working from home. Right. So there is a kind of presence there.
Yeah.
And I'm also lucky that I have quite a good support network locally. So my parents live nearby.
Okay.
And I've got sort of good friends and a brilliant childminder and, right. and all of that. And my my children are sort of really flexible. They understand that that I'm not around all of the time. I mean,
right.
my son, who's a bit older, sometimes gets a bit cross with me for not being around quite as much. But the other thing is, and it's something I'm really proud of about the garden, I think we have a really flexible working policy.
Mm.
We have a lot of senior women in the company. I think at last... when I last did my count, which was just a few weeks ago, I think we're 75% female.
Wow.
A lot of them are in senior positions, and a lot of them are parents.
Right.
And a lot of the male members of staff are also parents as well. And we want to try... I don't think it's that hard. I think there are ways of... With remote working, there are ways of being able to do your job well and be a parent and be able to be home at dinner time.
Yeah.
And I make a point of leaving the office anywhere between about sort of 5 and 6 o'clock each day.
Yeah.
I have a commute as well, so I commute from Kent up to London, which is about an hour or so. And I am home in time for... bedtime, which is something that I share with my husband. We kind of share that responsibility. I mean, he's already around, so they have one parent around anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think this point about parents being able to have that flexibility, or not just parents, but people who want a life outside of television, which, as we know, can be very demanding.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a way of being flexible. Now, I work 5 days a week. At the moment, I'm actually working one day at home, which is working really well. We have other members of staff who work 4 days a week, 4.5, 3 days a week, and we just try to manage the workload around that.
Yeah.
And we try to be as respectful as we can about people's sort of life outside of work. And so...
And does technology help you support kind of that flexible way of working?
Yeah, I think it does.
No.
I think it's a blessing and a curse in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're always on call, but equally you can work remotely very successfully.
Yeah.
And you can work just as easily from home as you can in the office. I mean, sometimes there is, of course, a need to be for people to see the whites of my eyes and me to, and vice versa. But often we do meetings over the phone.
Mm.
So technology is helpful. And actually, I was thinking recently, I went to a meeting the other day and they had a video conference.
Yeah.
And I thought, is that something that we should be thinking of, particularly with two offices now, so one in London and one in Leeds, in Yorkshire, and we want the two offices to feel very closely connected, which they do, but sometimes it might be helpful to have our kind of Leeds contingent in the room with us in London and vice versa.
And do you find the way that you are, your policies around flexibility and flexible working for parents, does that enable you to keep talent, would you say?
I think so. I'd like to think so. I think people, the feedback that I've had is that people feel very well supported. And it's not just around those sort of working hours, but it's also around things. We also understand that sometimes things happen in people's lives that means they have to drop everything and, go to a sick child, or something happens within the family, or their boiler bursts or whatever. And we're really understanding about all of those things, and try to give people time and space and support as much as we can. And again, it's a little thing, but I think it makes us a place that sort of what I hear from people is that people say it's a lovely place to work, and that actually for me is one of the most important things.
Did you win an award?
We did. We came second in the broadcast best places to work. And we were seventh in the peer poll as well.
Wow.
which is great, and actually particularly the best places to work, because that is, you know, that's people who work at the company are sort of judging us, and we don't know, it's all done anonymously,
but
I feel very proud about that, and I want people to feel like it's a welcoming, nurturing place, and that yes, they're going to work hard, and you know, and there will be times where it's unbelievably stressful, but we try to, in those moments of stress, we do our best to look after our teams, and sometimes that's sort of throwing extra resources, sometimes it's just a tray of donuts, you know, whatever it might be, but we do try to kind of listen and ensure that we're doing the best that we possibly can for people.
I think it's a really important point, and it's something that the reason why I wanted to pull this out really in this interview is because I feel that in our industry, across all the genres of broadcasting, is this thing that there isn't this flexible approach to working. And I know women find it really difficult, especially in drama, when you're part of a crew.
Yes.
It's really hard. It's really hard when you're freelance. So to have, you know, leaders like you where you're making opportunities for women and men to be able to see their children, to have hobbies, to enjoy life outside of work, so it's not just work constantly all the time, or you have to choose. You have to choose whether you want to work whether you want to work in television, and that should not be the way it should. You know, it shouldn't be that way. And I think it's brilliant what you're doing. I think it's excellent, and also to give those opportunities for men and women is
it's not exclusive to one genre, is it? And I think there's always been a sense that actually the women, you know, particularly around children, are the kind of the main sort of caregivers.
Yeah.
But actually in my household, it's the other way around.
Mine too, yeah.
And I really, my husband's brilliant and I'm very lucky. Mm. He doesn't work in TV at all, and actually his work were less flexible. although he was working at home. But I think it's unbelievably important just to understand that beyond what we're trying to do and make great telly, we're also, you know, there are a lot of people who are part of that process, who may have other kind of stresses and strains in their lives, it takes a little bit more effort, I think.
Yeah.
But it's so part of our DNA now,
right.
I think that it comes more naturally. And actually I was talking to our chief creative officer John Hay about it recently, and he said that yes, sometimes it's, you know, if you've got everybody in the office all the time, then that's great because you can get things done quicker, but there are just, it's just thinking a little bit harder about how you can work around that. If not everybody's in the office, what can you do? Do we look at video conferencing? Can we just get everybody on the phone?
Yeah.
Because actually, in telly anyway, people are out of the office a lot.
Yeah.
In edits, on location.
Yeah.
So you're never going to have everybody in the office. So it's not unusual for people not to be there.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, so there are, it takes a bit more effort sometimes. And it takes a bit more planning. If you know that somebody doesn't work on a Friday and you've got a really urgent question, you know, what do you do? Can you wait till Monday? Is there somebody else who can answer that question? Or have you planned properly beforehand to make sure that that question was answered on Thursday? You know,
there's one thing that you said to me previously that I loved, is that, you know, if someone in your team is away or their boiler broken down or whatever, then it is ingrained in your culture that
somebody steps in to help them. That's yes. just what happens. And so they feel like, it's okay, I don't have to feel guilty, I'm okay, because the next time that the other person's yeah. boiler breaks, they know that they'll support them. So it's that continuous flow of support, and having that just must make people feel so much happier about being there. Well, obviously it does, otherwise you wouldn't have come second.
I think so, yeah, and I think it's really, you know, and I will step in as well,
yeah.
And I'm not too proud to, you know, I'll do sort of anything that is necessary to make sure that a production or my team are supported. And I'm very lucky to have an amazing team as well, mm-hmm. which helps. And they will all support each other, and I will absolutely support them and do what I, you know, do what I can to step in mm-hmm. when, so for example, a colleague of mine has gone off to get married, and I was saying, you know, let me know what I can do. I'm happy to sort of take over projects just in right. the interim and caretake them.
Yeah.
So I think there is that, like you say, there is that continuous support. And I think that it's not just for staff either. We are made up of a lot of freelancers as well.
Okay.
It is a very a very transient world for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's really hard.
Mm.
And we do try to, sort of where we can, if we can see sort of progression for people, we try to support them through from project to project, and we've done that with a number of people. 24 Hours in A&E is a fantastic vehicle for that,
right.
For supporting and nurturing talent. And if you look across the at senior levels in the sort of factual community, there are a lot of those sort of senior level posts are held by people who have come through on A&E, which
okay.
is something, you know, and of course they've worked across other things as well, but
yeah.
And we've seen a lot of people come through the ranks there, and
right.
you know, and sort of going back to this point about training, again, we're lucky that we have a project of that size that can support that training, and we do that year on year,
right.
And giving people those sort of opportunities and supporting them through it as well. But I think that's important when you're freelance,
mm.
to know that I'm not just doing this job and then I'll be kind of chucked out and churned
yeah.
out and at the other side. I
yeah.
know how that feels, having
yeah.
been freelance.
And the continuous thought of, okay, where am I going next? It's that
yes.
isn't it? It's, you know, you can make, oh, it's ending soon. I've got to be looking for another job. And, you know, that continues, like,
yes.
not feeling, you know, stable, continually looking for the next thing, continually making new work friends.
Yes.
You know, it's constant, isn't it?
It's constant, and it's
and
really
when you're
hard.
Young, it's fine. You know, you can deal with that. But as you get older and you have other commitments and all that kind of
yeah.
thing, that's when it becomes very difficult, I think.
Yeah, and you can and you can't deal with that. I think sometimes sort of financially, particularly as the industry's been so sort of London-centric up till now, to be able to kind of live and survive in London is really hard when you're freelance,
yeah.
because once the money stops, you've got to find the you
yeah.
know, there's a sort of pressure to find the next job. And so, I mean, doing what we can to not just support our staff, but to support freelancers is really
mm.
important. One of the other initiatives that we're about to roll out our updated diversity strategy
right.
And plan. And one of the things that we've done at the company is to ring fence some a pot of money for, you know, diversity, and that specifically sits outside of production budget,
right.
and it's our team nominate people who they think might need a bit of training. It could be something as simple as they've got a gap between a job of 4 weeks and they can't afford not to work,
mm-hmm.
and we will pay for that gap and get them maybe doing some development or whatever. And it's to give those people that don't necessarily have those opportunities
mm.
Some extra kind of support and training
right.
That doesn't impact a budget.
Yes. Yeah.
But will help to kind of widen the kind of the diversity across the, you know, across the, not just in the company but across the industry, because that's another big issue that I don't think. You know, it's it needs, if every, I think if every production company could do something little, you can't solve the whole problem.
No.
But if we can all do something sort of small that's sort of within our gift to do, and by having a kind of pot of money that is something sort of small but quite tangible, and we've seen we've seen results from it. So
are you talking about bringing people into the industry or helping support people in the industry who come from all sorts of different backgrounds and
yes.
ethnicities and
yeah.
so enable them to be able to work in this industry? So because I guess if you've got 4 weeks off work, you know, you've got a next project, well, okay, well, who do you rely on for that income? Where do you go? If you're from a background where, I don't know, your parents can't help you, or you don't have savings, or, you know, you then
yes.
have to go into another industry where it's just continuous, you know, where you have continuous work.
Yes, exactly. And it's trying to help a little bit with some of those issues. And sometimes it's just, for example, you might have people who are just finding they're hitting a bit of a wall when they're trying to, they might be going from, we've been calling it the sort of frozen middle, so people that sort of are at a level but are finding it difficult to sort of reach beyond that level because they might have a sort of skills or training gap.
Right.
And it's looking at what we can do to support that. So can we send them on a camera training? Can we get them out shooting on a project for 4 weeks?
Yeah.
It wouldn't come out of the production budget.
Yeah.
It would come out of the company budget.
Yeah.
But and then we would make sure that somebody is overseeing that
right.
As well, to make sure that then we're not just saying, well, there you go, you can go and shoot
yeah.
on a production, and but you'll have a sort of an executive producer or somebody
right.
Checking their rushes and saying, well, you could do this or you could do that,
yeah.
and just sort of tutoring and talking them through it.
Yeah.
And just to give, it's about confidence sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just training, it's about giving people, saying to people, you know, we really believe in you.
Yeah.
You just need the confidence now.
And that's massive.
Yes.
You know, sometimes all you have to say that to somebody and you see them fly.
Yes.
It's amazing that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Tell me about what a normal day looks like to you.
Normal day. A normal day in telly.
A normal day from the beginning, you know. So what time do you generally get up? And
yes. I tend to get up about 6:45, I'd say. And then it's a sort of mix of helping to get the kids ready. I'm not one of these people who kind of jumps up and goes, right, I'm going to run 5K. I wish I were. I wish exercise were more important in my life. So I have a commute.
Yeah.
And actually, I really love my commute. So I live in Kent. I commute up to London. And it's about, the train journey is about sort of 50 minutes, 45 to 50 minutes. And it goes, you go from sort of really rural into kind of this sort of urban London.
Yeah.
And I just find it helps me both ways, actually, to get my head out of sort of mummy family mode
yeah.
into work mode, and then vice versa on the way back.
Yeah.
And it varies what I do. Sometimes I might read on the train. Sometimes I might stare out the window. Sometimes I might sleep if I'm particularly tired.
Yeah.
I do often work
right.
on the train and just get ready for the day.
Mm.
And then a sort of typical day, I do tend to have quite a lot of meetings and routines. And that's our way of kind of keeping, or my way of keeping across everything. So I have routines with my directors, with the head of production team. We have a management meeting with all the kind of senior staff every other week. And I think all these things are really important just to keep conversations going and knowing what's going on, and so that there is no sort of gap in knowledge between the sort of top of the company and what's happening sort of on the ground level. And I think that also helps to understand where the pressure points are.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think being able to have a kind of an overview of it, I can sometimes see the pressure points coming down the line and try to do something about it before
yeah.
they really hit.
And have you eaten at this point? Do you eat before you go to work?
I don't eat before I go to work. I get into work and I tend to have something to eat there.
Right.
And
any particular thing? Do you have to eat a specific way? Or
I try to. I don't eat a lot of carbohydrates,
right,
just because it doesn't tend to agree with me. Certainly, and wheat. That's not to say I cut it out entirely.
Yeah.
But also, sort of getting older, I'm getting getting lumpier and slower.
And you're tired too.
It does make you tired.
Yeah.
So I might have something like sort of Greek yogurt and fruit, or a piece of rye bread and peanut butter, or
it's very healthy.
I try to be.
Yeah.
I don't always manage it.
Coffee, tea?
An Earl Grey tea every morning. It's got to be Earl Grey.
Okay.
But I don't tend to. I'll have a tea in the morning, and then I tend to eat to have sort of fruit teas and herbal teas after that.
Good.
Again, just to try to, because what I find in the afternoon, often I do get a bit of a slump in the afternoon after lunch. So I have to be, again, I try to be a little bit careful about what I eat for lunch and avoiding carbohydrates, so I'm not sort of feeling like I want to put my head on my desk and fall asleep, which I have been known to want to do. And
do you, with your work, do you have to do maybe the hardest part of work in the morning, or and then maybe do more general stuff in the afternoon, or can you work at a certain level the whole way across the morning? For me, I have to do the hardest parts of my job in the morning, the bits that I know are most taxing, because by the afternoon that slump comes in, and I'm just better at doing more kind of methodical, easier things to do, really.
Yes, yeah, I know what you mean. I do. I mean, ideally, I like to have the kind of afternoon free to to do stuff, but it never works out like that. And if you look at my diary, it tends to be sort of blocked out.
Okay.
I try to kind of create space in the day to actually, sort of get through emails and.
Right.
Do whatever I need to do, whether that's sort of looking at contracts or whatever it might be, or even just sort of thinking ahead, a bit of sort of strategic thinking as well, which is the bit I really love and I never quite find enough time for.
And you have to take yourself away to think like that, don't you?
Yes.
You can't just be in it and think strategically. Or personally, I can't. I have to be somewhere else. Like, for me, being in the car works really well. It might be you in the train. You know, because then you just have a free mind, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And ideas come then, don't they?
And I try to do that with our two, with our chief exec and chief creative officer, the other two directors of the company as well. So occasionally we'll just take a day out of the office and just sort of talk for a day.
Yeah.
And sort of talk through things and about where we want the company to be and what are we that real I hate the phrase, but that sort of blue sky thinking,
out of the box
it does sort of represent what you're trying to do quite well, although it's a terrible phrase. And I think that feels really important, and that feels really good as well. I love that. I love those days that we have together, just really strategizing and thinking about things that might happen, that could happen. What do we need to do to get there? What are each of our roles in that as well?
Mm.
And that feels really, really good and really exciting.
Do you ever get involved anymore with, say your development team have come up with some new ideas? Do you get involved with? Would they then pitch them to you, or do you? How does that kind of work?
No. So the development team, they work directly to John Hay, our chief creative officer.
Yeah.
Mainly, and our chief exec, and
okay.
So they will. So what we try to do is when we try to involve production sort of early on.
Okay.
So all these conversations are happening on a regular basis. So we generally know what's what kind of ideas are front runners.
Right. Okay.
And at that point, we might talk about. We never. I mean, I think what's so wonderful about the garden and particularly the way production and editorial work together is, production are never the sort of ministry of no. They will always try to find a way and facilitate. And so there are often logistical and practical issues that we come across with some of our development ideas. But we will then sort of sit down and go, well, you could do it like this, or we could look at new technology, we could do it this way.
Right.
And I think that's really important for a development team to know that we're, I mean, we might be constrained by budget,
right?
But we'll never be constrained by our production team saying, well, you can't do that, or that's impossible.
Right.
The garden seem to like to do things that are a bit impossible.
So. Well, I guess before 24 Hours came out, then people would have thought, no, that's going to be impossible, surely. Like,
yes.
Because it was so different.
Yes, and particularly police custody as well, I think.
Yeah.
And there is a phenomenal team who work on that series.
Right.
They are astonishing and brilliant. I mean, all our teams are amazing, but I the amount of work and hard work that goes into making that series is so complicated, like legal. And the same for 24 Hours and A&E as well. Again, it's very legally challenging, it's logistically challenging.
A lot of hoops to jump through.
A lot of hoops to jump through.
A lot of
red tape, but you know, we've been unbelievably fortunate that we've had that the hospital have been very supportive as well, and actually the reaction that those, particularly those two, which are our bigger two shows, so it's worth talking about those two, have had sort of critically and within the industry is so positive, and actually with 24 Hours and A&E, I think the fact that we were up for a BAFTA this year for A&E after so many series is sort of testament to how fantastic that team have been in keeping the conversation going all the time about recreating, like, and making moving things on, and sort of modernising our systems and things,
and having an innovative approach to things, because that, obviously that's where it stemmed from. Like I said, you know, you could have thought, you could have come up with that idea and thought, that is just going to be too hard. We just can't do that. But obviously you have an innovative culture that enabled people to think, well, how about if we do this? Or, yeah, it is going to be difficult, but imagine the end result.
Yes, exactly.
So.
I always used to joke, actually, when I was head of production, that I would say that a development was sort of presented to me, and then the team went, but how can we make it just a little bit more complicated and more difficult for me to budget? So but actually that's the thrill of it, isn't it? And that's why you've got to have a production team that works really well and really closely with your editorial team and your creative teams, and the two are just knitted together.
Right.
It's so important, because there's got to be a sort of mutual respect and trust on both sides in order for that to work, and again, it's something that I feel very proud of at the Garden, that I do think there is that that sort of mutual support,
rather than us and them.
Yes, it's game over when that happens. I think it's really difficult to come back from that, because it's not, we're all pulling in the same direction. We all want the same thing. We all want to make brilliant TV, and to, you know, and for it to be a fun environment to do that in. We work hard. Let's make it, let's make it fun.
So tell me about so in your afternoons you try and block out some time just to get things done and also have meetings. And
yes.
So when does your day at work finish? Or do you have commitments after work? Does that happen a lot?
It does sometimes, but I try to be quite measured about that, not least because I want to see my family and I want to be fair to my husband as well. And to make sure that there's a balance, and so there are things that I want to go to, there are things that I think, you know, it's also good to go to as well. I'm always interested in meeting new people and sort of expanding my networks, and so I try to do a little bit of that outside of work. So as I say, I mean, I generally finish work between sort of 5 and 6 and go home, and there may be stuff to pick up in the evening, because I'm going home a bit earlier, and I don't mind doing that. The one thing that I try not to do is send emails in an evening, because that's people's time, and so I'll write emails and we'll send them, unless it's absolutely urgent.
Right.
But if it's really urgent, I'll normally pick up the phone, and then I'll try to send them the next day, so that people aren't, because what we forget sometimes is, even though I might send an email that might be I think, really, you know, just a very sort of simple standard email, yeah. it might worry somebody at the other end, and I don't want people's evening
yeah.
work to kind of encroach into people's evenings.
Yeah.
And actually, often when I am in the office after 6 o'clock and there are still people in the office, I go around the office going, what are you all doing here?
Great,
you're all young. You should be out getting drunk. God, you know.
And also the thing is that you... If you're doing emails on a night, that's your choice, isn't it? You're choosing to do that.
Yes.
You know, whereas, yeah. you know, your team may not choose to do that. And it's like what you said, you don't want to make them feel like just because that's your choice to do it, they have to then make that choice yeah. to also do it. That is an expected thing.
Yeah.
And so doing, I think that's a really great tip, actually, is that, you know, you're writing the emails because at that point you need to get that out of your own head. But sending it the next day is brilliant.
It's a really simple thing
yeah,
to do. You just
is.
Need to remember to send it from your draft.
Yeah.
And I do that, and I'll do that. And I, you know, and I do sometimes worry about, particularly with my head of production team, who work unbelievably hard. I worry that I sometimes encroach into their evenings too much. Not me sending emails, but that they've got a big workload. So I do my best to try to make sure that they've got support, or they know that they can bring in support to kind of backfill to make sure that they're not working till late at night. Because
do you have time with your husband at all?
Good question. Yes, probably not enough. He would say not enough. But actually, again, that's something that we were talking about it recently, actually, and I was saying, oh, you know, we do need to carve out proper time.
Yeah.
And at the weekends. And one thing that I am good at doing is cutting off. I mean, it doesn't always totally... You can't sort of empty your head.
No.
But I think I am quite good at cutting off. So at weekends yeah. and evenings... I can just sort of cut off from
right.
work and go right.
Now
you know,
I'm,
now it's mum time
yeah.
and it's family time
yeah.
and you know, and certainly at the weekend, spending time with the
yes.
kids is,
yeah,
you know, because those are moments you won't get back. So
yeah.
you know, you want to be able to do that without the sort of burden of what's sitting in your head. And I generally can do that quite successfully unless there's something really bad happening.
And do you get to eat with your husband and your family on that?
Yes,
yeah.
so we sit down and eat together. The one thing I don't, because I'm by the time I put the kids to bed, I don't cook as much. I like cooking.
Right.
I don't cook as much as I
okay.
used to. I found that kind of very, something quite cathartic about sort of
right.
chopping vegetables
oh, really?
And bubbling pots and
yeah.
And I don't really do enough
and
of that.
And having a slurp of wine.
And having a slurp of wine occasionally. Maybe.
And then what time do you go to bed? And do you sleep well? Do you have a ritual that you have to do? Do you read? Do you watch telly?
I do have a bit of a ritual, actually. And it's something that's just sort of happened over the years and it's really embarrassing. I tend to have a bath. Because
okay.
I just find it really relaxing.
Yes.
And when I'm in the bath, I listen to The Archers.
Oh my God, I love The Archers.
And do you know what? I used to absolutely mercilessly take the mickey out of my mum for listening to The Archers.
Me too.
And now I'm sort of obsessed with it.
I am obsessed. Do you know what? I feel that for me, The Archers, what it does for my life is if I have a really stressful day, I put The Archers on and I feel like I am in The Archers.
Yes.
I feel
you're
like
in the bull.
I feel like I'm on a farm, I'm part of their lives.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just like being part of The Archers.
Yes. And actually, it's just like, I think what it does, it takes you into another world.
Yes,
and that's
completely.
The idea of a soap, isn't it? It's taking you
yeah.
into another world. And it's actually, the more people I admit it to, the more people that admit back that, yeah, I listen to The Archers as well. So... So probably for the sort of younger generation, it's you know,
yes,
sort of deeply embarrassing.
They'll get to it.
They will get to it
they
eventually.
Will.
I mean,
they
I
will.
Yeah, they will.
Everybody
get to
succumbs
it.
At some point.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't tend to have trouble sleeping.
Right.
I fall asleep quite quickly.
Yeah.
I tend to wake up earlier than my children.
Do
I don't
you?
Know why, which is really annoying.
Okay.
So actually, although I set my alarm, I usually wake before my alarm. So
right.
any time between sort of 6 and 6:30 usually.
Yeah.
But I just, I remember my mum saying to me when I was little and I couldn't sleep, she would say, just lie in bed and a rest is as good as a sleep.
That's so true.
And so I won't get out of bed
right.
if I wake up.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, chill. I'll just enjoy the silence.
Yeah.
if my children aren't up.
And if you were to think about yourself as an older lady, so you've had your long career, you've retired, and you look back, what advice would you give to your younger self? Looking back at your life, would you do anything differently, for example?
Oh, gosh. I would definitely do more exercise, I think. It's a difficult one, that, actually. I think I probably do more exercise, spending more time with my husband, which I'm working on.
Yeah.
And it's not for want of, you know, we do spend time together, but like that real kind of quality time. I think that's important. And but I do feel, I don't think I have many regrets.
Right.
So I do feel kind of quite happy that I am getting the balance
right.
Right,
yes.
And I'm enjoying my work, and I'm enjoying my time with my children. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes wish I had a bit more time. I mean, I'm not up at, I have two children, I don't spend a lot of time up at the school. So what I do is I support the PTA.
Right.
And everybody kind of goes, oh God. But actually, it's my way of connecting to the school. And
yeah.
I think the kids quite like it. So when there are discos and school fairs and things,
yeah.
I'm they're the first on site and the last to leave, and they quite like that.
Right.
And, you know, and it's my way of being able to sort of give back.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Do you have any tips or advice for women who maybe are in a situation at the moment where they don't feel like, how do they continue with their career and think about having a family? Is there anything you would advise them to do?
It's, I think you need to, I don't think you should stop having a family for work. I think if it's something you really want, there will always be sort of stresses and strains around having a family, and you can't predict those.
No.
And even if you're the most well-organized person, and I think any parent will tell you this, well-organized person, and you think you're going to be able to work your life around the children rather than the other way around, it never happens. And I think there's always a way of working things out,
mm-hmm.
and things do generally find a, you know, you do generally find a kind of an equilibrium,
mm-hmm.
I think. So I just, my advice would be, don't hold back, do it.
Right.
If you want it, do it, and you will find a way.
Yeah.
You just will. And I'm not sure that waiting any longer will bring better solutions to that. So just, you know, go for it, because actually it's, I love being a mum, and my two children are amazing and keep me leveled and grounded and make me laugh a lot, and you know, and that is so kind of precious and priceless.